From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. In this hour, as part of our ongoing first-person series, we meet Ramona Pearson. Today, she is a leading Silicon Valley executive, CEO of a company called Declara, which she founded in 2012. She's had careers as an education innovator, aviator, neuropsychologist, and more recently, software developer. And she also became a champion cyclist and a rock climber. She did that while she was blind, and therein lies the truly extraordinary part of her story. April 1984, as a young Marine, she was walking her dog and a drunk driver ran a red light, hit and ran over her. Her dog died, and she became blind as a result after being in a coma for 18 months. Her chest and her throat were ripped open. The driver actually ran over her legs. She weighed 64 pounds, and after numerous surgeries, including a surgery on her eyes, which actually was a robotic surgery, she had to relearn how to breathe, how to eat, how to walk and see. And we welcome you to the forum program. Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's an inspiring and amazing story. And you are kind of a bionic woman still, a lot of titanium and everything. Huh?
Yeah. You know, in fact, I always joke that at the end of my life, they'll melt me down and turn me into a titanium bike.
In many respects, the prognosis wasn't good. I mean, there must have been something left in you to be Humpty Dumpty, some kind of fight or resilience, which is what makes your story so amazing. Many people would have perished having gone through what you went through.
You know, there were several things. One, I was a young person. Number two, I had been running marathons for the Marine Corps. So also in the Marine Corps, you know, they really instilled a sense of grit. And I think that that has persevered in everything that I've done in my life.
How many surgeries did you actually go through?
So early on, probably a little bit more than 53, and then I've had dozens since to make sure put my face back on. And sometimes I look in the mirror and I see parts of my buttocks on my face, and I can joke about that. But you know, maybe close to 70, 80, maybe more. I stopped counting, but you know, periodically I have to go in and have different body parts replaced still because the titanium or some plastic or metal piece just break off or have to be changed out.
Really amazing in awe of just your resilience and your attitude and all this. Your dog died and you were blind for a considerable length of time. You said that having a guide dog changed your life.
Yeah, you know, when I got hit by the drunk driver, probably I was actually running and the drunk driver had hit me on the side where my dog was. Had she not been on that side, I would have been dragged underneath the car. And instead, she took the brunt of the hit. So when I had the opportunity to get a guide dog, it was a German Shepherd. Her name was Annie. And she did two things for me. One was help me recover a sense of loss that I had. And number two, it helped me with being able to reconnect with society because it's really hard to interact with other people when you have a cane, a white cane that's between you and others. And Annie would often walk me into a restaurant and sit me at any open chair with families or other people, and I'm sure they were shocked to see some blind person come and join their table, but it opened up the world for me in so many ways.
You wound up at this actually kind of senior center in Colorado, which was a major experience. In fact, when you were talking about the cane, I think you learned a lot from the wisdom of these older people, including somebody who said to you, you're afraid about crossing a street when you were blind, and somebody said, just stick out your cane, right?
Yes. Yeah, you know, imagine, so I must have landed and looked like E.T. had come and visited the senior center, because by the time I landed at their doorstep, I was 68 pounds, completely bald, couldn't speak. I didn't have any cane skills and or ability to do anything, and the senior citizens really wrapped around me. So imagine having 100 grandparents that were focused just on you and nothing else. For one, they kept my life busy because every hour of every day was focused on them trying to figure out how to bring me back. and with a sense of humor, and helping me be able to laugh at some of my shortcomings, which helped me recover even faster, I think. And you're exactly right. When I had to confront crossing a street and tried to figure out how I was going to cross the street, the best alternative to being afraid was stick the cane out and see if a car was there.
Well, they also, in helping you reorient yourself to life, didn't they have playing Scrabble with cuss words?
You know, they brought this in because I was an adult and I felt very self-conscious about relearning how to speak. And this plays into a lot of what we do with Declara and bring the playfulness of learning and bring the human piece of learning into the technology. And, you know, it's very hard to be an adult and try to learn how to time your lips with your tongue and grabbing air and holding air and moving your throat again and uttering a new word and having it all make sense. And when you're a child doing that, you know, you're practicing with goo goo gaga, you know, all of these different sounds, you don't feel self-conscious. But as an adult, sounding like a baby, it was really painful emotionally for me. So the men felt like, well, let's figure this out and make it playful and fun. And so they helped me overcome a lot of obstacles with bringing in humor and jokes.
And we'll talk more about what happened vis-a-vis Declara and your entrepreneurial career, your career in Silicon Valley. But the biggest change, you said, was looking down at your hands.
Yeah, you know, when I had to have brain surgery, and they were able to bring the sight back in my left eye. I received a cornea from somebody who had passed away and donated their cornea, and they reattached my retina. And so when I started to have my sight back, I remember trying to remember what things looked like because I had my memory trace of what things were had started to disappear. But when I looked at my hands and saw that I had aged and, you know, more than 10 years, and it's shocking because in some ways you're thinking that time isn't moving for you. So it was unnerving to realize that time kept marching on for me.
You talk about just what you learned from being blind, and what you learned from being blind had a lot to do with the relearning process. I mean, when you became sighted, and you said also you picked up some bad habits.
Yes, I had picked up a lot of bad habits. You know, there are a lot of pieces in your question there that are very interesting. As a blind person, so when I learned to be a blind person and learned how to eat and shop and organize my shelves and learn Braille, I had to relearn everything as a blind person. I built cognitive maps of everywhere I was and counted all of my footsteps. And I had some oddities where I thought, well, if I don't want to be seen by somebody as a blind person, I thought, well, I just need to duck so no one could smell me. And of course, I'm sure that looked ridiculous. And when I'd tie my shoes, I'd, as a newly blind person, I bent over one time when I was sitting and smashed my head on the table because I hadn't learned that I needed to put my hand out and understand what was in my space. And then getting my sight back, it was revealing that I had a very strange consciousness of what the world looked like and that some of my cognitive maps were off a little bit.
And you learned a lot from that. I mean, a lot that became applicable to what would be a career in Silicon Valley, which I want to talk with you about. But first, let's go back to Colorado for a moment, because you've referred to that whole experience as, and it also contributed certainly to your success, entrepreneurial and technology success, extreme radical collaboration.
Yes. You know, I bring that up because I had the opportunity to relearn everything from having people invested in my life, and these people had to assess everything that I needed. They did essentially a gap analysis without really having the term for it, seeing what I had, what my strengths were and what my weaknesses were. And I think my failings in the hospital where we didn't have all of these people who had all of these talents and skills come together to really piecemeal my life back together. So in senior homes, you have people who used to be doctors or mayors or bankers or chefs or cooks or teachers. And so in one space, I had people who had all of the skills that I needed for my life. And they came together and really pulled me back together again. And so Declara became this tool that allows us to bring crowdsourcing into learning so that we don't look at one mentor or one set of content or courses and curriculum to try to help people learn. We bring a series or a set of people with expertise to your learning.
The collaborative learning notion, the idea mm-hmm. of learning and relearning, of personalized learning, of adult learning, of mentoring, all those kinds of things coalescing, really, yeah?
Right. You know, in fact, I am a person that basically reflects, you know, the modern lifelong learner, that there are no careers today that don't require us to be a lifelong learner. All of us have to plug back into our learning trajectory because our jobs, our businesses, careers are constantly in flux and changing, and nobody stays in jobs 20 years or more anymore. And technology is changing so quickly that we have to rethink what education means and how we educate our educators so that they're facilitators of learning and that we continue to enrich their learning and their lives so that they can build lifelong learning students. And I'm also the product of innovation and all the technologies of putting me back together again. So my eye, my brain, my nose, my face, my leg, my heart, my throat have all been put together by some startup, some innovator, some person who took a risk to invent something.
And again, let's get back to something you said before about taking the fragments of yourself. I mean, you learn to create kind of a cognitive map in your mm-hmm. head. You compare it to the Matrix, in fact.
Right. So very much like that in Declara, we are leveraging a cognitive graph so that we can personalize learning. So we look at personalized learning from the user's perspective instead of from a content perspective. In adaptive learning, you really understand the content and you branch out, you know, if-then statements. But what we're trying to do is really understand the intent, interest, and learning needs of people and bringing the right resources, the right experts and mentors and content to people based on their learning trajectory.
I'm getting certainly a strong sense of your character and your nature, but let me, if I could, get you to talk about what nurtured all this. I know your background is Texas and Southern California, college, Marines. Marine Corps certainly does. They used to say the advertisement shapes men, but obviously shapes women too to a great extent. But I'm curious to know what the influences were in your life that shaped your kind of approach to life, your thinking, your attitudes.
You know, I think a few things. One, the accident did make me realize that I had to make the most of my life. And then being in the senior citizens home where so many people came together and focused on helping me become a productive person again, I have felt this need and desire to not just, you know, pay it back, but pay it forward. And try to live my life in a way that is constantly trying to find out ways in which I can help other people find their path and to find their potential.
And let's get back to just what you've learned that you've applied to the business sector and that you've applied to a lot of the success you've had in the business sector about the importance of mentoring. I mean, it's key. And mm-hmm. it was key for you in terms of your rehabilitation and reorientation into the world. But we keep hearing all kinds of different views about mentoring, and I'd like to hear yours.
You know, if you are going to learn to be a great cyclist, you can read a lot of books. Or you can connect with somebody who actually races bikes and ask them questions. And for the most part, you will learn a lot of things very quickly. So mentoring can be very effective if you are connected to the right people at the right time. But you're exactly right. If you are not being mentored by people that you trust or that actually have the kinds of information that you need and the right steps, it can either be overwhelming or it can be not very useful.
Were you mentored? I mean, you were blind and became a bicyclist, when I hear more about that, as well as a rock climber. Mentored to do those things?
I was. A woman who used to do the X climbing, you know, very crazy rock climbing. She met me in Colorado. She was a college student, and she said, "Hey, blind girl, you want to go rock climbing?" And I thought, well, what do I have to lose? So I've already been run over. So what's the worst that could happen? I could bounce off a rock. So she took me out rock climbing, and it felt like I was brailing a wall. So I could figure out the path that I was going to take by touching the rocks. And I have to also say that when you're blind, you spend so much time holding a cane or a person or a guide dog that the freeing experience of moving up a rock and guiding yourself tactily is the most exhilarating experience. Plus, when you're blind, you're not afraid of heights. So it was
Oh, but you
to
could be
advantage.
Afraid of the rocks coming
yes.
down, right?
True, true. And then cycling.
I should mention your name, U.S. Master Cyclist of the Year in 1995. This is no small feat, but that the year you regained your sight, that was a year before that, you were riding tandem races with a sighted person. Yeah.
Yes. So along the way, in order to get my left leg to work again, and it was quite painful, a racer for Yeti Bikes had said, "Hey, why not get on the back of a tandem and I'll just force your leg around the pedal stroke?" So different cyclists would steer the front of the tandem bike and try to force the mobility of my leg, and it was quite painful. And then over time, as I started being able to bend my leg, I started becoming stronger and stronger, and very much enjoyed that experience. And, you know, finally, somebody from the Master Cycling team had started coaching me and helped me become a better and better cyclist. And Glenn Winkle was a six-time World Cup champion, and he coached and steered me through World Cup championships in Austria.
We're talking again with Ramona Pearson. She is now CEO of Declara. They are a Palo Alto-based company that uses a tech platform to personalize learning. Let's talk some more about personalized learning with you. I mean, this is you've been doing things essentially also to take people and move them out of one. I mean, for example, farmers into other areas, that sort of thing. I mean, actually transpose them almost literally.
Yeah, you know, in Australia, so a lot of our countries around us are struggling with moving into knowledge-based industries. So in Australia, where the global warming has basically been decimating the agribusiness, and they're starting to see that some of the mining businesses are starting to come to the end, they're looking at how do we retool our entire workforce. And they're taking on a two-prong approach. One is changing the education system, and so changing how teachers teach. And so we've started there working with educators, a very bottom-up movement where the educators are driving the learning instead of the country. And it's been amazing to see new content curriculum rolling out there.
And you're really readjusting the economy here to the different economy, yeah?
Exactly. And then you have an entire population that's having to retool themselves so that they move into a new economy. And that's happening rapidly throughout the rest of the world, in Latin America specifically.
whether we could do that with all these people who work in coal or fossil fuel into alternative energies here.
Exactly. You know, and I think about it, think about all of the jobs that are open. I have to double the size of my engineering staff, and a lot of companies worldwide are trying to fill all of these jobs, but there aren't enough people in the workforce that can fill those jobs. And so you think, well, there are millions of Americans that are out of jobs. Why aren't we helping to retool them so that they can be connected with all of these open jobs?
I'm thinking, just as we're talking here, I mean, we're having rich conversation, we're giving eye contact with each other, making gestures, body language, and all that sort of thing. These are the kinds of things you also had to relearn after your blindness?
Yeah, you know, when I was blind, I would rock a little bit, not too much, and it was because I lost social context. And even now, when I look in the mirror, I notice that because I don't see out of my right eye, it droops a little bit, and I have to sometimes think, oh, it has to, I have to blink that eye or do something. And when I first got my sight back, I used to lean on walls or people on my left side because I was used to having a guide dog or a cane, and tend to sort of walk off to the side. And, you know, even in cycling, because I'm blind on my right side, all the women would yell, well, blind girl in the pack, because I'd run anybody off on the right side. So I still have some weirdness in my behaviors, and I tend to hug everybody and hold people. So when I was working in the hospital, I could feel people's, you know, their emotions by holding their arms. And so when you're blind, you tend to stand closer and hold on to people. So it gives you a lot of clues into, you know, how someone's feeling. And once you have sight, everybody backs off away from you. And so at first I was a little lonely because all of a sudden the social distance became quite large and I had to reteach myself to back away from people.
Did you also find, obviously because of your bicycling and so forth, very competitive. I mean, you have a strong competitive spirit. Did you mm-hmm. find that was dampened when you were blind and when you were going through all of the rehabilitation you were going through?
No, not at all. In fact, it drove me more because I wanted to, when I went back to college, a lot of the colleges were fighting about me even going to college. Because they'd say, well, less than 1% of the people who are blind will finish college. And I've literally had professors that would reject me being in their class. And I'd talk to them personally and say, if I'm not the top student in your class by the mid-quarter, you can kick me out. But so I had to constantly compete to show that I deserve to be in that classroom or I deserve to be in
that
college.
What kind of classes did they want to kick you out of because you were blind?
Well, statistical classes, a lot of the computer science classes, right. and a lot of the classes where they felt, you know, there were stigmas around somebody who was differently abled being able to compete, especially I had to create some of the new technologies to be in those classes because this is a time where your computers didn't speak to you. We had to actually leverage Berkeley Labs around DeckTalk and VocalEyes, and I'd have to invent ways to emboss my writing right on the spot so that the teachers could see it and I could feel it.
So you became an inventor, too.
I mean, exactly.
Technology inventor. Ramona Pearson with the CEO of Declara, and her personal story is, as I said, a remarkable one. We're hearing that. We're also hearing about the work she's done. Let's go back to relearning. I mean, you must have learned some pretty substantial things about how people relearn. And again, there's a broad continuum, I'm sure. You know, some people relearn better than others. They adapt very well. They're very versatile that way. Other people, they're in mothballs, and it's quite difficult. But what kind of generalizations have you come to?
You know, when I had to relearn, I had severe TBI, so a traumatic brain injury. And so when I see, there are parts of you I don't see because there are aspects of the brain that have been damaged. And so it's not just the physical aspect of my eye itself. So I had to really learn how to take the weaknesses in my brain and understand those and the strengths of the different lobes and be able to leverage those to really reorganize the dendrites and really reorganize how I was going to recover. So I also not just struggle with a speech problem that was physically caused, but also having a traumatic brain injury. I have part of the brain, so I have to actually think a little bit longer than most people to speak. So I have learned how to speak in a different rate in order to get the right words. I also suffer from paraphasia, so I might grab the wrong word periodically. You know, I might be talking about my bike and call it a washing machine, and, you know, people look at you a little strange, but I just keep going. So all of us may have a different way of learning, but the bottom of the conversation is that we all have these strengths, and if we really understand the person, we can design a learning pathway that goes through a bit of a trial and error and learns the best way in which you learn. And that's what we try to do in DECLARA, is really customize the learning experience for you. And in education, a lot of times we're trying to make kids or adults adapt to education instead of having education adapt to the adults or the kids. And so we try to do that.
When you say we all have these strengths, something in me resists that notion because, again, your resilience is pretty distinctive. You're talking about reorganizing your dendrites. I mean, most people don't even think that way.
Yeah, I'm a little metacognitive, but I've been forced to have to think about thinking. And some of us don't do that naturally. And I really believe that if people understood how they think, if they become more cognitive, they can be better learners, and because they'd understand more of their strengths and how to leverage those strengths to compensate for weaknesses and to even leverage those weaknesses.
You've been listening to a special encore edition of Forum from our archives. Our guest was Ramona Pearson, who after 18 months in a coma, relearned how to walk, see, and even breathe. She's the founder and CEO of the personalized education software startup, DECLARA. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum up ahead on this Independence Day.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.